Good morning. A reading from Genesis, the 32nd chapter. The same night, Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two maids, and his 11 children and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream, and likewise everything that he had. Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he struck him on the hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, "Let me go, for the day is breaking." But Jacob said, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." So he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then the man said, "You shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with humanity and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life is preserved." The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the thigh muscle that is on the hip socket, because he struck Jacob on the hip socket at the thigh muscle. The word of God for the people of God. Good morning, church. It is a joy to be with you here in God's house celebrating Pride Month. Thank you for the invitation to preach here today. As you know from Pastor Julian's excellent introduction, my name is River. I am named after the New River of West Virginia and the Upper Iowa River of Northeast Iowa. These rivers were my friends when I needed to tell my story, and there was no one who could listen. The New River was there when I first started to understand myself as outside the cisgender heterosexual mainstream. The Upper Iowa held me up when I first publicly came out and had nowhere to go. These two rivers were places where I met God and wrestled with all the information I thought I had and the realities I was living. When I was struggling to understand my faith and my queerness, when I was first coming out, I spoke to my college Hebrew teacher, who pointed me to the stories of the so-called patriarchs shared between the Jewish and the Christian traditions. Jacob and his son Joseph quickly became my favorite patriarchs. Joseph because of his extravagant and gender non-conforming clothing, and Jacob because he's just a little bit different. Queer Bible scholar Michael Carden explains how Jacob breaks down the athletic, hunting provider role of men, and instead fills the requirements of patriarchy through sly thinking and plotting. Often these traits are viewed as things to be avoided, and yet throughout all my years I've learned that thinking on my feet and planning for a variety of contingencies have helped me stay alive and safely housed. The text today provides an interlude into some really lovely family drama, like it would be on some daytime TV if it were around today. The story begins by the Jabbok River, now called the Zarka or Blue River, and Jacob, his family, and his property are traveling from the home he made with his wives and their father Laban, and they're returning to the land where Jacob was born, the land of Canaan, where Jacob, the second child, got his brother's birthright and his father's Isaac's blessing on the firstborn. After parting ways on less than ideal terms, and being estranged for about 5 chapters, Jacob and Esau are about to see each other again. Jacob's brother Esau is coming to meet him. This is the night before the big meeting, and Jacob has prepared for a variety of responses. In the autobiography, I Know What Heaven Looks Like, Reverend Lawrence Richardson, a United Church of Christ Black trans pastor, tells a story of family discord and housing insecurity. In his story, he talks about his family kicking him out even as a teenager in high school, before he was Lawrence, because he did not fit into their notions of religious propriety. As he worked his way through high school as a gas station attendant, he would ride city buses and walk along the Mississippi River to bide his time until he could find a friend's house to crash at or a low traffic location to squat sleep. Eventually, he sought out reconciliation with his grandmother, the one who had kicked him out of her home because of his sexual orientation, through a phone call. She agreed to let him come live with her, but with strings attached. He could only return with the promise of rejecting queer identity. Like Lawrence, Jacob is faced with potential familial rejection and faces the next part of his journey alone. We find Jacob sending his family across the River Jabbok. Jacob's wives, children, servants, and possessions are all across the river. And Jacob stays on the other side. For what is perhaps the first time in many, many years, Jacob is all alone. And he doesn't even get to go to bed or eat food. There's no mention of anything happening until a man wrestled with him until daybreak. How exhausting. You're about to meet your brother, who you haven't seen in many years, who may or may not hate you, and you can't even sleep the night before. And not only can you not sleep, you spend the night wrestling with someone or something, perhaps even with God. We don't know who Jacob wrestled with by the Jabbok. There are many interpretations offered. In the Jewish tradition, Jacob wrestles with an angel. In some Christian traditions, Jacob wrestles with a pre-incarnate Christ. What we do know is when the encounter finally ends with the being asking for release, Jacob is blessed with a new name, Israel. Jacob then offers his own interpretation of the text, that God, through an angel, has given him a new name, and later on in the Hebrew Bible, Hosea affirms this interpretation. Many of the stories of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people are filled with wrestling with God, and with churches, and with families. There is so often a deep desire to remain connected with the traditions that have provided grounding and framework for life, along with deep fear of rejection from these same traditions. Jacob must have felt some of these same hopes and fears of reconnection and rejection as he anticipated meeting his long estranged brother Esau. Would it be a moment of reconciliation and harmony? Would Esau come with his armies and blow them off the map? Would Esau ignore the entire announcement and nothing would even happen? Often, 7 or so passages of scripture, the so-called clobber passages, are used to silence and reject LGBTQIA+ people. Much of LGBTQ theology and biblical interpretation centers around how to neutralize or reimagine these specific aspects of our faith tradition. When I was coming out, this is where I spent most of my time wrestling. But during that time I was wrestling, I participated in a directed reading class with my Hebrew teacher. And this was where she introduced me to the idea that there was more to life, there was more to Bible study, there was more to theology than trying to prove that I or anyone else is worthy of love, dignity, and respect. there were serious scholars of Christianity who believed that LGBTQ people had specific and special gifts and perspectives that enriched and blessed Christianity and the church. There are many names that we place on ourselves or society places on us, such as our sexual orientation, gender identity, racial identity, economic class, education level, job title, religious affiliation, and on and on and on. Some of these, like our sexual orientation and gender identities, we get to give ourselves. Others, like graduate or foreigner, others place on us. But each of these names gives us a different perspective on the way we look at the world and the way the world sees us. Each of these names are gifts that enrich us as a community and as individuals. Throughout the Bible, the names or identities which people brought into the community enriched our story of faith and our experience of the divine. From Ruth, the Moabite, who became an ancestor of Jesus, to Lydia, who hosted an early Christian community in her home. This week in Chicago, two mainstays in gay community life have made horribly racist decisions. They've chosen to mark their establishments as unsafe for some, and they've attempted to rewrite history, forcibly removing the cultural contributions of certain parts of the queer community. Their actions said that certain parts of the LGBTQIA+ community are more welcome than others. They've said that some of the names and identities which we use are more acceptable than others. The act of erasing people and saying some people are less welcome or less acceptable is contrary to the message of God who liberates. Society has rules for who can and cannot be included. Throughout the Bible, the people who society says should be left out are often the people through whom God works. One of the things I love most about names is they can change. When I first acknowledged my queerness, I used words like gay and man to describe myself. And as my experience in the world and of others has changed, I've shifted the language that I've used. Throughout the Bible, names can shift and change and become something new and reimagined. One of the first stories of naming happens when Hagar, running from Abram and Sarai, who are treating her really awfully, she calls out from behind the bushes and receives the promise of Ishmael from an angel of God who she gave the name, the God who sees me. And then just a chapter later, God comes to an older Abram and Sarai, long past childbearing years, and says, y'all are going to have a son named Isaac, and changes their name to Abraham and Sarah. In the Christian Testament, Jesus asks the simple yet loaded question, who do you say that I am? And Simon responds with the words of faith we still declare today. Jesus, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And at this declaration, Jesus changes Simon's name to Peter. These stories all point to the ways in which God is present with humans during times of change and uncertainty. Even when God doesn't change your name, God is present in the tumult. A couple years after the attempt at reconciliation between Lawrence and his grandmother, he experienced an extended time of disruption in his life and attempted suicide. During his recovery in the psychiatric ward, his grandmother came to visit him. She told him the story of how she visited him every night while he was recovering in the intensive care unit, how she found his apartment, which he had prepared for whoever was contacted if he had died. She talked about reading his journal and reading his prayers, begging for God to make him cis and straight. She told her story of recognizing that God did not tell her to push Lawrence away, but rather her congregation did. And she welcomed Lawrence back into her home after he was discharged, both to continue to heal and as part of the reconciliation of their family. Shortly after I moved to Chicago for seminary, I tried on new names and identities to see what might fit better. And as I tried on these new names and identities, I realized that I wanted to change my given name. The identity that my old name conjured up in my mind and the minds of others no longer matched the reality I was living. I decided to become River. So I gathered some friends of mine, and on a cool early fall evening, we walked down 55th Street to the lake with our memories, with our hopes, and our fears. We commended them all to the care of God who sees us, who knows us, and guides us. During the short ritual we held at the lake, we burned our memories and wrote our hopes for who I might be. And at the end, each of my friends said to me that my name would be River, and so it was. God welcomes you into the beloved community with the names and identities you call yourself, each and every one of them. God calls us to welcome others as we have been welcomed. During this month of Pride, we turn our eyes to the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer members of God's family who rioted and organized so that they could be themselves in peace, and who in many Christian theological circles fought too for churches to recognize their position as part of God's family. To recognize that when we are welcomed into God's family, we are given an additional name, Beloved of God. Thanks be to God.